This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. One of the great things about the last quarter century is that we talk much more openly about our mental health than ever before. Being honest about how we're really doing, and when we're struggling, we don't hide it as much anymore. But for a lot of people, the part of asking for help is still a challenge. According to BetterHelp's 2026 State of the Stigma report, they surveyed 2,000 Americans and found 85% of them believe getting support is a good idea, but 74% felt that society discourages people from doing so. That's something we can all pitch in to fix. Not only should we be encouraging our friends and family to seek help when they need it, but we should be celebrating with them when they do so. This is something I know I do in my personal life a lot, and I encourage as many of you to do it as you can. This is the best way to pull the stigma away from therapy, which drives more people to access it. With BetterHelp, you can be matched with quality therapists with care and reliability. BetterHelp does all the initial matching for you, so you can focus on your therapy goals. BetterHelp is one of the world's largest online therapy platforms, with over 30,000 therapists and having served over 6 million people globally. Don't let the stigma stand in the way of support. Start therapy with BetterHelp. Sign up and get 10% off at betterhelp.com. That's better, H-E-L-P.com.
Welcome to the 40K Lorecast.
Welcome to 40K Lorecast with me, John Barsotti, and Brad Chester.
This guy.
Today, we'll be concluding our coverage of the Word Bearers with the end of the heresy and a very rapid jump into their actions after the heresy. We'll explain more.
Why, John?
Because there's like 17 novels we have to cover later, and I'm like trying to half cover them now. I'll explain it when we get there. But once again, as always, 40K Lorecast, weekly show in the lore of the Warhammer 40K universe, releasing every Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern. Please follow and comment. It helps. It takes like 2 seconds. Your comment can literally be comment. I get a lot of those and I support all of them. If you like this, you want to check us out, more of our stuff, links in the show notes. The links are to our YouTube for our bi-monthly Q&As, which really are more tri-monthly and sometimes bi-monthly. These things happen. Links to Brad's YouTube channel where he can talk about competitive 40K with knowledge and experience. Nerd. Nerd. A link to our other show, The History of 40K, where we're joined with Alan and discuss kind of the history of the game on the tabletop. Those can be pretty fun. You can also check out my other show, Retro Recall, where I play old video games, sometimes begrudgingly, sometimes with joy. That's just what happens to old video games. And if you like us and want to support us, 2 great links. One, to our merchandise. It's well made and it's funny. So get some merchandise. We even have stickers, as Brad learned a couple weeks ago.
You know, it's on the top right now. Stickers. I feel like the stickers only went to the top because
I have made no changes to the website. Zero changes.
I swear to God, they weren't there.
Zero
changes. My brain doesn't work. So there's a real chance that I was wrong because I've been wrong and I'll be wrong again.
At a certain point, you should work on being right a few times, though.
Let's not worry about those kind of things. I have, you know, instead of being right, I like to be excited.
Yeah, that's the old phrase, yelling, second best thing to being right. But another way to help us out is join our Patreon. Again, Patreon's a great way to support anybody that you like. It's a wonderful way to support artists, although some people have Patreons for no good reason. It's like, whatever, I'm getting in trouble, but there's some Patreons. I'm like, really? Also, there's also a lot of GoFundMes where you're like, no. Anyway, but our Patreon, you get this show and the history of 40K for $4.99 a month or 1,044 Guyanese dollars. So Guyana, it's a really interesting country because it's in South America, but it functions like it's in the Caribbean. It's a country in South America and it's the head of CARICOM. So figure that one out. But they do speak English, and it was an English colony, and it's probably because the English and Spanish weren't getting along great at that time, so Guyana was trading with Jamaica and Trinidad and had to kind of be left alone by all the other guys down there. Now, Guyana is situated within the Amazon rainforest, and it is pristine. It actually has more biodiversity per square kilometer than anywhere on Earth. Scientists go there just to kind of wander around and discover new species by accident. You can Google some of the fun stuff they have there. They've got their national bird is called the Kanye pheasant, and it's known as the strangest bird alive. So enjoy that, Google. They also found a blue tarantula. So that's a cool thing. Now, Guyana, though, is famous, unfortunately, for 1978. This is where the phrase drink the Kool-Aid comes from. This is where Jonestown is. Jim Jones decided to build a colony in the middle of the jungle, and that's Guyana. Now, when things weren't going great, he had a fix. And fun fact, Kraft Foods, the maker of Kool-Aid, have insisted for, what is this, 60, 50 years now, that it was not Kool-Aid they drank, but the cheap knockoff Yeltsin. And I could not care less if this is true. I just enjoy this super lame attempt by them to get everyone to stop saying, drink the Kool-Aid, with a super nerdy response being, you know, technically, it actually wasn't Kool-Aid, rather than what they should have done, which is, what do people that know drink for their last meal? Kool-Aid. Just saying. And also, potential advertisers, I am available for freelance marketing. I await the calls. On a more,
you should sit next to the phone on that one, John.
Any day now. Any day now. I think it's better. What do people that know drink for their last meal? Kool-Aid. It's a great one. You have a guy on death row or just a bunch of people, you know, in the jungle in a wooden hut. Just throwing it out there. Now, positive note, Guyana had for a long time an extremely poor country, but in 2015, the largest oil reserve in Western Hemisphere was discovered there. So it actually has the fastest growing economy on the planet. It is pushing towards Middle East Gulf right now. So there we go. And yeah, we have a listener there, maybe two. I can see you. And yeah, I'm aware of you. All right. Lastly, our Discord. So we always have a link to our Discord because we'll keep having a link to our Discord. Great place to interact. We've been having a lot of fun in there recently with a lot of people interacting on telling me stuff I got wrong, but more importantly, with the launch of 11th edition, some of the new books coming out. Really great place to learn the lore, have a conversation with other people, find recommendations for other things, especially with navigating the new 11th edition. It's been kind of great. But anyway, let's get into this. Hi, we finished our last cast. Lorgar and Erebus were each aiding.
Big sigh, buddy.
Because Lorgar's an idiot. All right. So the last cast, Lorgar and Erebus, they're each trying to create their own champion of Khorne. Khorne wasn't technically elevated at this point, but he was set in the path. And during this time, Lorgar starts to turn against Horus. He sees Horus as a weak, like soon to be puppet of the Chaos Gods. And in Lorgar's mind, he's unworthy.
Weird about it because he looked at it in two stints too, because Lorgar felt that he was becoming a puppet, but he also felt that he wasn't assuming all of their gifts at the same time. It was written two different books that way.
Yeah.
And in the end, I don't think it was either one of them. I think he's just mad because he was the one that discovered the Chaos Gods. You know, he was the architect of the heresy. And I felt that no matter what, this would eventually drive him, that his big brother was still in charge. I think that he was going to be no matter what, because in different books, they've talked about different things that were all contradicted.
Contradictory. Yes and no. My viewpoint on it has always been, I think Lorgar, you're right. He looks at Horus as not accepting the gifts because Horus tries to claim, I'm still in charge. But at the same time, he's being possessed. I viewed it more as Lorgar looked at Horus kind of the way that like a lot of failed athletes, like, you know, people like, I don't know, there's no one I can think of, but who was really good in high school at football. No one I'm thinking about right now looking at just messing with you, buddy. who would make a comment like, if I were taller, you know what I could have done, like that type of thing. Never comes up. I just hypothetical. We're doing a hypothetical human being here. But
hurtful talk.
Sorry, it was just so that one was so easy. But that's how I viewed Lorgar. Is Lorgar looks at Horus and says, if I'd had those powers, the things I would have done with it. And I think that's how you make those two, because they are contradictory novels, align, where it was, yep, you aren't being what I would have been with all of that type thing.
Yeah. I think it's just a letter of resentment on this.
Yeah.
And to be fair, Lorgar's not 100% right or wrong, because Horus is falling apart right now.
Horus is, I mean, we're going to get to it in a second, but we got to take a little break before we get there, because we have to talk about someone named Zardu Lyak, because Zardu is really important.
He's going to be much more important.
He brings him with him to go see Horus.
Yeah. One. Zardu becomes a very key character for a chunk of time. And he's going to actually matter more. He's going to matter in this cast a little bit, but in the cast we're going to do in like 5 or 6 months, he's going to matter even a lot more. And I'll explain more on that in a minute. Zardu was a chaplain for the Word Bearers during the early parts of the heresy, back when they were anti-religion. And he was part of what was called the Ashen Circle. And the Ashen Circle was the specialist who would go after a planet was conquered and seek out and destroy all the artifacts and religious symbols. During this time, though, he started having visions while he was doing it. And the visions were of Lorgar telling him to uncover the secrets of the Emperor, to learn the real truths, the hidden by the Emperor from everybody else. And these visions are a function because Lyak was really a super powerful psyker. This is post the what's it called thing. So he had to kind of hide him a little bit, but not that much.
He actually gets a couple words of Enuncia, basically the words of creation.
Yeah.
Later on.
But Lyak is a wildly powerful.
He gets those from dreams, though.
Yeah. Like, and the truth is, in my opinion, he was just being fed by chaos. He had because he was a psyker, the barrier between him and the Immaterium wasn't strong. They were able to reach into him and they began twisting him and moving him their ways. So as he starts down this path of chaos, first he stops destroying the idolatry he finds in worlds. He does just consume it. He starts reading all of it. Sending Lorgar, actually, to be honest. And he starts sparing the lives of people and a lot of the relics in the worlds that he is supposedly freeing and moving from religion. So he's just, he's a bad guy, effectively.
He's another mustache twirling bad guy.
Yeah.
Another guy. Yes, when they do the pictures of him, the drawings and everything else, they're after he's into chaos, but they're so comically evil.
Well, him and Aaron. The six eye glowing helm, which we'll get to in a second, doesn't help.
It's still better than the fact that Erebus has the full tattoos scarred into his face.
Nothing wrong with tattoos. I don't have any on my face, but I'm just saying it's because I haven't thought of one that was worth it yet. And everyone I've seen with them, it hasn't worked out. So
not so much.
Yeah. Now, after Monarchia, Zardu goes full chaos. He takes command as a first chaplain of the Awkward Gate, which is the chapter within the Word Bearers that are especially zealot followers. And Zardu ascends to the lead role due to Erebus picking him. Erebus just looked at this guy and was like, yep, you are on team Erebus.
Yeah. I love that he goes, who needs to be in charge of the Ochre Gate? And there was the guy going, I'm super evil. He's maxing out points in character creation and evil. You're like,
Erebus looks
that guy.
I think Erebus might have one Chaos God say, yeah, it's Zardu. And he went, oh, okay, cool. Zardu it is. Now,
as he was picking, his hand just goes directly to him.
Yeah, it's a Ouija board that works. Yeah, it goes right to Z. All right, so Zardu is one of the more hardcore chaos elements of the heresy. Some of the characters that we discussed, they're like chaos adjacent because they were infused with chaos power without knowing it. Like early Karn. Early Karn's a good example.
Yeah.
Karn was always evil, but later he was...
But a lot of those guys, what they were getting was a little bit of the carrot, a little bit of the carrot, a little bit of carrot until they're too deep in.
Yeah.
They kept taking the rewards that they didn't know where they were coming from. Yeah. They just, I'm awesome and I'm becoming more awesome. And then you down the line.
Like, oh, I gave my soul over. Oops. Whereas Zardu's Typhus and Erebus, where it's like, wait, what are we doing? Yeah, okay. I'll drive this party bus. Let's go.
Yeah. That guy did not read the terms and condition. He scrolled to the bottom and said, I accept. I
mean, to the point where Zardu accepts demon possession in an epic way. Because he becomes a Gal Vorbak, and all the other Gal Vorbaks became that way because they were in the warp, got killed by what's her name, and then demons possessed them. Or, picked up a demon blade, and that possesses them. Nope. Zardu just gets so full of hate and anger that it just basically happens. He becomes angry enough that chaos infuses him, because he was like... He was converting his chapter over to chaos. And at one point, like as he changes the name to the Unspeaking, he finds a demon helm, just does, and bonds it to his own face with chains so that no one will ever see his face other than the gods of chaos. But his helm looks awesome, by the way.
Yes, it does.
It's a super cool thing. And I'm going to cover this in brief. If you guys want to know more about Lyak, The Crimson Apostle is the novel this comes out of. But Lyak does this kind of really good side journey in this novel. And it's a nice, GW does a lot of these. I'll call them there. It's Wicked. Let's just call it what it is. How did I get here? That's what these are. But he has a nice Wicked knockoff and it's well written. So go with it. He travels to a place called Helwyn, which is a former word bearer world and has gone dark. And once he gets there, he finds three of his former associates had turned away from the word bearers and become an independent colony. This is earlier in the heresy, so this isn't the later stages. And he discovers, Zardu discovers, it's a wonderful warning that he just blows off. It's almost like inverted Christmas Carol here.
Well, they find the actual truth.
Is Christmas Carol the one with Scrooge, right?
Yes.
Okay, good, thank you. I'm not great at this stuff. So yeah, I love this. Zardu discovers the real truth, which is that everyone there is being affected by chaos. They realize chaos is always destined to lose. All three of these people he meets tell him, yeah, this world fell to chaos, and then we all started killing each other because that's what chaos does.
It's always a pyramid scheme. They're always scheming against each other. None of the chaos gods can ever actually win because they wouldn't be able to continue to be in existence because they wouldn't have enough of the elements that make them them. It's always going to fall apart, period. And they find this out and explain, and he goes, that's stupid.
Yeah, that's he basically doesn't come up, that's stupid, and no, not for me. And in the process, he
breaks his brain by finding it out, effectively.
Yeah, it does. Effectively, he ends up in like a loop where he just can't get out of, because here's an old movie reference. Is it War Games, the one where they make the AI play tic-tac-toe?
Yeah.
There we go. Yeah, he's the AI in that. And he's struggling. So his way to solve it, though, is to rip his own eyes out with his power clawed hands and then cut six holes in his face, which he then shoves demon orbs in. So Palantirs.
Yeah.
And now he has the coolest model in all of 40K Heresy. So there's that.
Yes.
But Zardu learns no lessons from this and goes, I love the Chaos Gods. I'm going to embrace the Chaos Gods. And as a reward for doing that, the Chaos Gods give him the ability to thrall basically anybody. He can do a little spell and people are mindless.
I think he's against so he can not see. I think he's words of powering on this.
Yeah. But
he's got creation words.
Yeah. It's a strange novel because the entire novel is, hey man, don't do this. And he goes,
we're going to get into it much later. I want to do this. But Erebus does this in some future books. People that have way less psychic power than others end up doing wildly powerful things because they're almost, it's your D&D and you get your mid-level character gets thrown an artifact effectively. That's how these are. These are things that they can't do normally, but they give gifted a huge amount of power.
That makes sense. The cool thing about Zardu, though, is he rejoins the Word Bearers for the battle on Koth. And there, two main things happen that make him really important. First, him and his chapter, the Unspeaking, were on the front lines against the Ultramarines on Koth, and they were the ones who were turning themselves into demons. They were just summoning demons into the fight and charging into Ultramarines. But it was kind of a suicidal charge, so almost all the chapter ends up dying on Koth or getting trapped on Koth, except for him. He's able to leave. The more important one, though, is Lyak becomes Lorgar's closest confidant because Cor-Faron disappears into the warp at this time. Erebus bails. So Lorgar's kind of running out of people he normally looks to. And Lyak becomes
To be fair, again, Erebus goes on a full side quest, 100% for the Chaos Guys.
Oh, yeah, 100%. So Lorgar's sitting around and his dad is gone. His number two is not that reliable. So Lyak firmly supplants himself as Lorgar's number one guy. Now, speaking of Erebus, fun story on Erebus. Erebus, we talked about this last time, after Nusaria, Erebus is a little bit persona non grata in Word Bearers, very much so in World Eaters. Very much so in World Eaters. After those events, Erebus just goes back to Horus to join him on the campaign because Erebus's plan since the beginning was not to be Lorgar's right hand. It was to be Horus's. And so with that in mind, he came to Horus with a really bad idea, just terrible idea. And Erebus meets with Horus. So this is, Lorgar's not present for this part of this, and discusses how they both know about the red thirst within the Blood Angels. Because Horus had walked in on Sanguinius killing some of his gene children who had succumbed to it. And Sanguinius had confided in Horus what was going on. And the Chaos Gods just straight up told Erebus about it.
Yeah, let's say about it. Yeah, he knew about the thirst.
So Erebus proposes, why don't we set a trap for the Blood Angels? A trap that'll put so much rage into them that they'll fall. And then Sanguinius will have no choice but to give himself over to Chaos. And we cover this in the Blood Angels cast, so I'm going to cliff notes this thing here. Horus sends Sanguinius, who's unaware of the heresy, to Cygnus Prime. There, the Blood Angels were supposed to fight a Xeno tyrant known as the Nephilim, who'd been enslaving the people there, but it was just demons. All demons.
And it was 100% a trap.
Yeah.
It's a trap.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a pure Admiral Ackbar. They get there. There are no Nephilim. They're just a lot of greater demons. Sanguinius gets dropped because Kabanda kills so many Blood Angels that he actually, at the second backlash, drops him. Kabanda ends up about to steal the soul of Sanguinius, well, steal something, about to give it to him, when instead some random apothecary jumps up and goes, I'll do it, and runs through the portal instead of it. So the apothecary named Meros saves Sanguinius and the Blood Angels.
Sanguinius gives to the Hogan finger and gets up and puts his booty's muddy ass kicking out.
Oh, Kabanda does not do well.
Obliterates a Kabanda.
Yeah. And so the plan of this trip was to go out there and come back with a demon-infused Sanguinius. And all they came back was a demon-infused apothecary. Known as the Red Angel. He'll come up more later, but that's it. But this is a failure. And Erebus is furious. Furious because of the failure, but also because I think some of it has to do with Lorgar, because Lorgar heard about the plan and told Erebus, this will never work.
This is pointless.
This is a stupid idea.
Yeah. The guy that's not turning to chaos is Sanguinius. So,
well, yeah, it's basically you're trying to convince the Emperor to turn against the Emperor. That would have gone better, candidly. That might have gone better.
Emperor would have listened to you.
Yeah. This was just stupid. And so Lorgar told him, like, this is the dumbest plan I've ever heard. You're going to fail. And so Erebus, in his mind, it's like, I turn Horus, I'll turn Sanguinius. The problem for Erebus, he's not a great loser. And so back on the Vengeful Spirit, the word comes back about the failure on Cygnus. Erebus gets heated and he starts chastising Horus for not following through on the plan correctly.
You're not saying enough of it. He starts shit-talking Horus. Yeah. Chastising would be nice and probably would have got him not about to get obliterated. However, he was not.
Yeah.
He was talking a wild amount of shit.
Horus's response seems fair and imbalanced. He grabs Erebus, takes the anathema dagger, and carves all the skin off Erebus's face. That's that. Just removes it all. It grows back, though. Don't worry about it. For all of our our Erebus fans who were nervous, don't worry, it grew back.
Yeah, he had to have cool chaos tattoos all over his head, so yes.
Yeah. So Horus, though, interestingly enough, though, is not done with Erebus. He uses this moment not so much to banish him, but just to reestablish his dominance. So I view this more like pack animals, where like the alpha will just attack and put things down, but it won't kill. That's what Horus is doing. Like, hey, you don't get to talk to me like that. Are we clear now that I've ripped all the skin off your face with a dagger? Probably the blunt end. Awesome. Great. But Lorgar, at the same
time, as much as I hate Erebus, you have to give him credit because he did not back down after he got obliterated.
Oh, yeah. He had the skin peeled off his face and went, hey, I'm still good.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
Have you been sitting on an idea for a while now? Have a concept for a business, but just have not pulled the trigger yet? Welcome to us and in this podcast about 2 years before we started with a bunch of, hey, we should start a podcast. And the good news is starting a business is easier than ever now, thanks to tools out there like Shopify. With Shopify, you get all the tools you need to start a business and make it successful. You get the experience of a global commerce platform representing 10% of all e-commerce business in the US alone. You get built-in tools that'll help you grow between writing product descriptions, page headlines, even advice on photography. And all of this comes with 24/7 customer support to help you with your journey. Take your passion and get your side gig going. Speaking from experience, you won't regret it. Get started today with a free trial at shopify.com/lore. With Shopify, nothing stands between your ideas and a real business. So go make one. Start your free trial today at shopify.com/lore. Let's start your trial today at shopify.com/lore. In my professional life, one thing I know well is how challenging managing a global team can be. Just the act of creating one has been an extreme challenge over the years. Because one thing you learn quickly is the difficulty of hiring global talent and how unclear those costs can be. It looks simple at first, but then the fees start to stack up with compliance worries, contractors versus employees, and a host of other regulations. Pebble brings clarity with upfront, all-in hiring costs and enables you to hire the world. Pebble is an AI-powered human resource platform built for founders, HR leaders, and operators who are hiring and supporting teams around the world. Pebble helps you hire, pay, and manage talent in over 185 countries with fast onboarding that can be done in minutes. Instead of juggling separate tools for contracts, payroll, benefits, and compliance, Pebble brings everything together with built-in compliance and local expertise to support you. This is especially helpful if you're managing teams internationally or planning to grow. The fastest growing companies in the world use Pebble to stay organized and reduce risk. And founders use it to scale faster without feeling like they need to become HR compliance experts. Bottom line, it simplifies global people operation so you can spend more time growing the business and supporting your team. Pebble's new standard discounted pricing is only $399 per month per employee. That'll help you contain cost. Go to hipebble.ai to get a free estimate. That's hipebble.ai for a free estimate.
Now, let's get to Lorgar, and Lorgar making a poor choice. So not long after Lehman Russ paid Horace a little quick visit where he rammed him with a spear that was totally not made up of xenotechnology that the Emperor stole, probably Blackstone, but that channels the Emperor's power. Anyway, Horace wasn't doing great at this point. So he's barely conscious. His soul's being sapped. The way that this spear kind of worked was he got jabbed with a spear. It's almost like a tip broke off. All right, they stole some Lord of the Rings. Let's call it what it is. They stole from Lord of the Rings. Okay, he got stabbed with the, what's it called, dagger. And now his soul's being eaten by the Emperor from afar. So he has...
This is part two of him having to dive deeper into his warlock pact that he's making with the Chaos Gods.
And so exactly, as Horus is giving himself more and more over to the Chaos Gods in order to stop himself dying here, it starts to change him physically, but also changes all of them around him, like his crew. It
mutates the shit out of the ship. Yeah,
the ship,
Ventral
the crew,
spirit
everything.
Became just the warp embodied.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the Ventral spirit, let's call it what it is. It becomes the latter part of Event Horizon.
Yeah,
That's where this goes. Now, by the way, Event Horizon is stolen from 40K, so look, credit where credit's due on that one. This is not one of the thieving things they've done. Around this time, Lorgar returns, and Lorgar looks at Horus and just goes, ugh, like, what the hell happened to you? He has, because Lorgar has embraced the primordial truth. He is spreading the primordial truth, but he's not a pile of mess that Horus is. And Lorgar looks at Horus as being, okay, he's weak. He's the chaos infusion is basically poisoning him. And Lorgar can see into his soul and sees that Horus's soul is basically disappearing. And the chaos gods are just devouring and fighting over it. So Lorgar makes a plan. Horus is ready to make this final assault on Terra. And he orders all of the Legion to Ulanar for a final staging. But when this call goes out, the Emperor's children don't respond. And that's what everyone kind of realizes. Hey, has anyone seen Fulgrim in a while? And everyone goes, no, I haven't. Even Petarabo is probably like, he's good. Let's not worry about him too much because that dude sucks. So Lorgar, though, knows where he is. And he offers to go grab him. And Horus goes, yeah, go get Fulgrim. Lorgar grabs Zardu Lyak, his number one, and they head back to the Eye of Terror.
And they also send Petarabo to go get Angron while he goes to get Fulgrim. but also because he's got an ace in the hole for getting Fulgrim back. So we'll talk about that in 2 seconds here.
Yeah. So when he gets...
Sometimes you got to talk about some true names and make people do stuff.
This part's funny to me because they say they go to the Eye of Terror. They don't go into the Eye of... Well, I guess they enter the Eye of Terror and they end up at the Palace of Slaanesh because that's where Fulgrim is, hanging out with his demon Inkari, having the best time. Fulgrim is on 100% gap year party right now. Like, I want nothing to do with anybody else. And
I'll use the quote from one of the books on it. Slaaneshi delights.
Oh, I was just going with George Bluth when he's in prison. I'm having the time of my life. And so Lorgar approaches Fulgrim and tells him there's a time for play and this isn't it. And Fulgrim starts laughing at him, saying, why would I leave and go do work? Which, by the way, makes me think, if you haven't seen the Robot Chicken Star Wars episodes where it's like with a droid.
You have the droid sitting on the couch watching.
No, I don't want to do it.
I don't want to do that.
Uncle Owen, this droid is a bad motivator. That was a magically good line. Anyway, but Lorgar knows this. He doesn't care. So he actually was expecting this. So Lorgar starts shit-talking Fulgrim. And Fulgrim gets up to go fight him. And as he's fighting him, Lorgar was just playing defense. Not that he could have done offense against a four-armed snake demon prince, but although it may be of the rules he has in 10th edition, he could have.
Yeah.
That was a wet noodle in data sheet. But
Lorgar has to is hang out for a couple minutes, mm-hmm. though, because Lyak is going to... He has a little bit of a trump card on this.
Yeah.
Because he's got Fulgrim's true name, which is a full story in and of itself, by the way, and worth reading.
Yeah.
Because how he comes to get it and kind of throws a couple people into the woods.
It's fine. It's chaos. He's like,
hey, man, would you read this for me real quick? Because you will have your mind wiped. Yep. Once you read it, I would like some of that information, though. Don't worry
about it. You read it out loud. You'll be fine. So, yeah, to Brad's point, Lyak utters Fulgrim's true name, his demon true name, and Fulgrim is now a slave to Lyak. He follows his every command without questioning or resistance, can't resist. So Lorgar collects Fulgrim.
Real quick, I'm throwing Fulgrim under the bus for this. We did a little bit when we talked to Emperor's Children. Fulgrim is now failed... What, 4 willpower saves in a row?
Yeah, let's just say if your party's relying on Fulgrim to roll better than a 6, he's not going to. He's going to roll a 1. He does it a lot. Now, fun thing about Chaos Gods, unlike your grandma, they don't just give you treats because they enjoy watching you be happy. Lyak had been gaining a ton of power recently. He strapped a demon hole to his skull. He carved out his own eyes. He's mentally thralling people. And so the demon gods are throwing a bunch of power to him, but there's a catch. And that's because chaos never gives you a finished product. What they give you truthfully is desire. That's the real gift of all chaos. No matter which god you go with, it's the desire for more. Is their thing. Slaanesh is the easiest one. Khorne's just as much. They're all in that boat. And the case of Lyak, he began to see himself as more important and more knowledgeable than everyone else. And so he sees a choice. And his choice is serve Lorgar and attempt to usurp Horus, placing him at the right hand of Lorgar in the ensuing conflict, or betray Lorgar and work his way to the right hand of Horus. Given that Horus is already aligned with the Chaos Gods directly and is the current War Master, Lyak went with the easy route. So, this story's hilarious, by the way. Lorgar confronts Horus and does a whole speech and basically challenges Horus to a fight. And as Horus gets closer...
Let's back that up, though, because by the time he gets back... Horus has now been juiced back up.
He's like twice the size, too. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I'm saying he's now not suffering anymore from the spear wound. Mm-hmm. He's actually doubled in size and super powerful. You're like, hey, man, remember when you were going to make your move? It should have been before this happened.
It's a hilarious scene because Lorgar does like effectively challenges him to a duel. I am going to usurp you. And as Horus moves forward, he goes, all right, Lyat, get him. Send Fulgrim to attack. And Lyat and Fulgrim both look at Lorgar like, what the hell are you talking about? Because Lyat had released Fulgrim already. And so Horus looks at Lyat and Fulgrim with the, you guys want any of this shit? And they both went, Nope. And Horus goes, cool, and beats the ever-living hell out of Lorgar, and then banishes him, much of the chagrin of Abaddon, who wanted Horus to kill.
The Don was so mad about this. Yeah. He's like, why are you not mud-stomping this guy's head?
You already beat him to oblivion. Kill him now. The irony being X probably works out better for Abaddon than it doesn't. Anyway. Horus turns, my favorite part of this, that Horus then turns to the rest of the word bearers and goes, anyone else got a problem?
And I mean, Lorgar, he did the Achilles. Yeah. He gave the, is there no one else?
Yeah. Lorgar then goes, all right, guys, it's all right. You don't have to fight him. Let's all go. And all of the word bearers look at him, then look at Lyat and Erebus and go, we're good. And so Lorgar has to leave on his own for now.
It was, for now, because he's got a lot of stuff coming up later, but he did have to leave in full shame on this.
Yeah, it was hilarious.
Which I kind of feel what he was trying to do. Horus was trying to let him live in shame, like it would be more honorable to kill him kind of thing. But it works out for Lorgar in the end.
So Lorgar then goes on the long path because he can't return. He knows he's going back to the Eye of Terror, but he has some more stuff to do because he wants to get better aligned with the Dark Gods. So he does his long journey back to the warp and he stops off at these like random word bearer worlds, collecting what legionaries would come with him. And he ends up on this world called Yasimi, where he uses a chaos ritual to, in effect, make a projector. And he just sits there drinking a beer and watches the rest of the
I do like the fact that every time he accepts a gift, he accepts one god at a time kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's what Abaddon's doing right now because he pushes the gods against each other so he never gets taken over. Hey, I'd like knowledge. I want to check it out. And effectively him and a bunch of legionnaires, by the way, effectively just watch
the Jumbotron
screen.
Yeah. Just, all right, let's watch the Jumbotron of the Heresy. And they hang out together just like, this is way more convenient. And they watch Horus fail. Once Horus fails, actually, technically, Erebus tells him, hey, Horus died, but he's watching it, you know, all this stuff. He then goes, all right, let's bail. And he goes into the Eye of Terror. When he gets to the Eye of Terror, good news, because Cor Farron's just been hanging out in there after almost getting killed by Gilliman.
Also, you got to remember, let's talk about this. He did not, when Lorgar, and this is where you get Abaddon doubled down, Lorgar doubled down. This is where you get the Long War. This is where you get the chaos. Chaos is now playing the long game now. This is not a failure. This is just the beginning of a new, longer.
Exactly.
As long as it takes. And this is why chaos is also winning now in more modern 40K, because they're playing the long game, or they continually play the long game
here. Exactly. But what's cool is Lorgar gets into the Eye of Terror and he arrives on New Colchis, because Cor Farron knew Colchis was not going to make it, and it didn't. And he builds the planet Sakaris there. And this is great for Lorgar for two main reasons. First, he gets an immediate staging point. So he builds the Dark Council there. This is a leadership group. It made up all the most powerful of the word bearer sorcerers.
Some really powerful sorcerers here.
Yeah. And then they build cathedrals. And so Sakaris is turned into a beacon of warp power. And what they basically use it for is it accelerates anything that goes around it.
I like this a lot because this feels like, for all you D&D folk out there, this is where their casters, I think, could take on Thousand Suns casters because they have places of power. They build these huge cathedrals to the dark gods, the chaos gods, and they have power there. They have so much more power there than they would anywhere else.
Yeah, in effect, whereas a lot of the Thousand Suns are more powered by Tzeentch, truthfully, the Word Bearers are just powered by the warp. And they can do rituals way better than anybody else can.
Yes, they also know they have... There's a couple books I'd like throw out here, but they have some really great, because the word bearer, a lot of the word bearer's most powerful magic is by sacrifice.
We'll hit on the trilogy shortly.
It's really, they find this from an early on. in their chaos, that they, the most powerful magics are done by sacrificing souls. Mm-hmm. And they do this really early.
The other part, though, that's important, and this almost matters more, they got a head start in the war. So all of the other legions come back into the Eye of Terror. And when they do, they start turning on each other and attacking each other to steal slaves' power. And we covered this in other casts. The Word Bearers were already there and fully fortified. So you really couldn't do much about them. They were a unified legion. They didn't break up. They're one of the few legions that doesn't turn into war bands. They have war bandish. They do have individuals who do stuff. But as a core, there's still a governing body of it from the start. And so this is it. Next 10,000 years, Lorgar hangs out in the warp and on Sicarus. Not idle, though. He becomes the general of his army. He aids them when they're out in the Materium. All, and eventually we covered before, he becomes a dark god. Not dark god. He becomes a demon prince of the dark gods. But more on that later. What we're going to do now.
Lorgar also goes into, we'll talk about this in a minute, but he spends a lot of time in meditation in the old Temple Magnifico. Where he's just kind of sitting in his summoning circle for a long time.
Now, what's going to happen is we're going to do a little jump, go to the left, and then a jump to the right. We're going to time warp, guys. We're going to skip most of the heresy, actually all of the rest of the heresy. And the reason we are is because, short version, Horus dies. All right, there you go. Heresy failed. Now you all know what happens. But the real reason is because we're going to cover the End of Death books later this year is the plan. And the Word Bearers are all over that. And it would be six more casts here to do this. So we're just going to kind of jump after that. I wanted to introduce these characters like Lyak. He's going to be, Lyak and Erebus are huge in the invasion of Sol. Massive. And the invasion of Terra. So we're going to cover them a lot more then. And we're just going to skip that and go right to post-heresy. And this,
we're not going to talk about Lyak trying to solo
Dorne. Yeah, it doesn't go great. It doesn't go great.
He's like, I got this, guys. You're like, hey, should we bring the rest of the raid into the room? Now I'm going to solo the boss.
Yeah, I got this. It starts, it for a second he was okay, and then he was not. But let's talk about the Word Bearers post-heresy, because they're actually one of the most active and nefarious chapters post-heresy. Candidly, they're the biggest concern of the Inquisition.
They have the most cultists. They have the most cultists. They have the most traitor planets and cults going around. And they also are willing to sacrifice those cults. There is so many fantastically evil stories about the Word Bearers.
Oh, yeah.
One of my favorite is when they had a million cultists run at walls so they could make a ramp of the cultist bodies to get over the walls. And then they drove rhinos over it. Mm-hmm. But they also will corrupt an entire world just to do a ritual and snuff out all life on that planet, which they've done multiple times.
One of their favorite things to do. Yeah, they are horrifying. And the Inquisition is extremely concerned about them. The thing is, like, the Space Marine chapters each have their own, obviously the Ultramarines hate the Word Bearers the most. They each have their own thing. The Word Bearers aren't really a combat chapter. They are, don't get me wrong, but the real danger is what Brad has said. They just do messed up stuff. And so we'll go through some, there's some codex lore here and there's some novels here we're going to hit on, but I want to use some stories here to just really drive this point home. Because first off, of all the legions, they use demons the most. I don't think anyone's surprised by this, but they wage war differently than other legions.
With one, they summon the most demons. So they're very adept at it. Mm-hmm. But again, their base magic isn't just be powerful psychers in their own. They're like, I know I need to sacrifice a bunch of stuff, willing to do it. Apparently wildly charismatic, because they have even more cultists than Alpha Legion does, and a lot. And do this by,
if you want to worship the Chaos Gods, Word Bearer is a good way to do it.
Yeah, they're very pro that. And then you find out, oh, am I about to be part of a giant spell? Bummer, which happens a lot.
Are you just figuring out now why I covered the Jonestown massacre for this guest? Ta-da! Look at me being clever.
I just love that you're like, hey, I'm in page two of our sorceress spells, and I already have to kill how many people to power any of these? Well, I like it just because a lot of their sorcerers aren't just like the dudes doing battle front line. But if you give them some time, they will put some serious, I look at their magic as shamanistic, witchcraft and mm-hmm. stuff like that. They're great at rituals, and they will cause real problems in a sector when they summon a zillion demons after they perform a powerful ritual.
Yeah, and another cool thing about them is they also use a lot of demon engines. Defilers, Forge Fiends, Mauler Fiends, they're good, Brad. Don't stop telling me to stop playing them. Hellbrutes, those do kind of suck.
One of the coolest guys ever, because they have Dark Apostles, otherwise known as Chaplains of Chaos.
And this is what they do. So their leadership also is very different. They're more like the Thousand Sons, and sorcerers play a key role in their actions, but they're not just casters. The Thousand Sons have that. The Word Bearers use chaplains, it's probably just the same with Dark Apostles, who then provide blessings. So instead of casting a spell like prescience, these guys actually put blessings on them. In fact, their power is, I think, more aligned with Eldar. If I think about the way it works, it's like, I'm going to power up everybody to do this thing, whereas the Thousand Sons are more like Doombolt. All right, look, that thing's gone.
I'm obliterating what's in front of me. There's so much of a difference in their caster. They've got buff. They have huge buffs, but the Thousand Sons, you think of Doombolt, lightning coming down, mm-hmm. the Emperor firing down Force Lightning. That's what I think of when I think Thousand Sons. These guys are utilizing ways to influence and mm-hmm. buff, and using, again, giant rituals, which I still think is great. That's what I think when I think chaos, too. Yeah. I think these dark rituals that come out.
And this is aided by their organization, because unlike any other Chaos Legion, they're fully organized. They have been for a long time, because we're in M41 right now. So the Chaos Legions are a little bit different. We've brought back a bunch of Primarchs. Abaddon and Typhus are also still there. And they've taken more control. Like Angron now has a lot more control in his Legion. But that's a newer thing. Even Mortarion, it's a newer thing. The Word Bearers have been ruled by the Dark Council for 10 millennia.
Ever.
Yeah, the Dark Council determines what you are going to do. And your goal is to get on the Dark Council. Yes.
And it's also, the Dark Council has been kind of forcing the will of the Dark Gods for a long plan, mm-hmm. too. Again, we have the Rift. We got a lot of backage of Abaddon during this. You know, they're doing a lot. The Word Bearers are active from day one till right now.
Yeah, they are still, though. There's a lot of Starscream here where they get really close and then go, Megatron, and then they lose.
They are the foil for almost all of... When you're trying to beat Chaos and you want to show how tough a Legion is, Word Bearers come in to get beat.
Exactly. So let's talk about some stories. So M36, the Garryo Sector, they're in a full rebellion, and the Garryo Sector sits in the crossroads of warp travel for the planet Arcus, and this is just starboard of the Sol system. I'm still doing that. And my favorite part about doing that is how you both had to look up which direction starboard is. Anyway, which one is it, Brad, left or right?
What's that?
Which one's starboard, left or right?
And there then port is left.
You know why, everyone? Because Brad lives next to the water. It's come up.
It would be bad if...
It would have been bad. That's what I was checking.
I've done competitive racing and sailboats. If I didn't know, bad things would happen with ropes.
That's a fair point. Don't be like David Carradine. Anyway. I'm not editing that out. For the record, I'm not editing that out. That's staying in. That was a gem. All right. So suddenly the hives all over this planet go in rebellion and the world goes dark. So the 6th company of Ultramarines are sent there to put down the rebellion. And then when they get there, it's not just the hives in rebellion, but the people had dug massive runes into the planet itself.
It's so wild.
And then began sacrificing themselves to said runes. But it was the Ultramarines.
They're legitimately powering up the planet for chaos.
Yeah. But the Ultramarines go full doctrine. I mean, it is, because you got Word Bearers, cultists, demons. And they were like, all right, we'll start with Devastator. We'll move into Tactical and then move to Assault Doctrine.
They're just reading from the book.
Yeah, it's like, all right, Gilliman says go to the left. All right, we're going to the left. But in this, it takes the 6th company loses 70% of their forces in this battle. They eventually do save the world, but that's just an example of like how nefarious the Word Bearers are. Because the Word Bearers, there were a few Word Bearers there, but there weren't that many. This was just a world they were like, I don't know, let's just make everyone there a demon. Then the Ultramarines had to go, fine. Then you get the world of Conqueror's Due, which was once hosted to like one of the great imperial triumphs. So it's covered in all these 100-foot high depictions of Primarchs and the Emperor and all this stuff. And so word bearers and cultists start disfiguring the statues and start tearing some of them down and making it a ritual. So as the whole world goes to rebellion and the Imperium says, screw this, send in Titans. So the Adeptus Titanicus arrives and begins just wrecking shop. These are Titans, not Knights, Titans. And as they're going through, turns out there was a part two to the ritual.
Oh, I love everything. This is where I come in to yell, because this is so awesome, because the Titans are wrecking shop. I felt we didn't sell these statues on how big they are. This isn't like, hey, statue of Brad in the lobby. And it'd be at least 6'5". But these are hundreds of foot tall statues, and they start coming to life and start dropping the people's elbow on Titans.
Yeah. They start beating up the Titans with...
Yes. Oh, so bad.
Like the Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man. Yeah. That's unfortunately how I see it.
I did not go... In my mind, I got this awesome battle where these statues start coming to life and destroying, and then you ruined it with Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man.
Wait a minute.
I'm so sad now.
I mean, Zool. Let's just call it what it is, all right? The word bears... I'm upset that GW hasn't had the Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man be part of a word bear ritual.
All right. It's the safest thing I could think of, guys.
The Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man. All right. On the Shrine World, another one is on the Shrine World of Nephthys Madrigal. The sisters are basically reinforcing this world against a demon incursion. And then Lord Vile Blight, who's a greater demon of Nurgle, wants the world for himself, but he can't get there because the sisters have placed anti-warp runes all over the place.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
And they've done their own rituals because they're powered by the Emperor, who's definitely becoming a god. Yep. But they juice this up until the word bear. They did what they did before the word bears came.
Lord Vilebright reaches up the word bearers for help. And so the word bearers arrive. And since they're not demons, they're not affected by the runes. And they begin a campaign not of conquest, but of destruction. Because they're taking a lot of casualties, the word bearers are. Well, but they're destroying orbs.
Yeah.
Yep.
Because the sisters don't know what they're doing at first. They think they're coming to fight and conquer and everything else. And they start taking pretty big casualties because they're just ignoring some of the fights and places that you should be staging on and are making a beeline to destroy these ruins.
And eventually the ruins get low enough that the entire world blinks and Lord Vilebright appears with a horrifyingly large amount of plague bears. Yeah, all of the plague bears conquers the world almost in an instant. And then Nurgle's most pleased with the word bears. Another good one, though, of how nefarious the word bears are. This is why the Inquisition is so afraid of them, is you can never figure out what their plan is. Like on that last one, they start attacking and blowing up ruins. What are they doing? Oh, it's so someone else can come in. They do the same thing on the Night World of Donatos. This is all night houses. The planet gets attacked. They come together to repel the invaders. This is not hard for knights, by the way. I mean, you're talking the word bearers against five night houses.
Which the night houses, the night worlds are wildly powerful.
Yeah.
This is just tons of knights with also super skilled pilots that have been doing this their whole life.
Problem is that as they go to fight, three night houses arrive. And that's because the other two were distracted and the word bearers got there and inserted a scrap code into the throne mechanicums, which infects the machine, but also the pilots themselves.
Pilot, because the pilot is one with the machine because he's bonded with it.
And now the world becomes involved in the Civil War. Those knights actually end up leaving. They become Chaos Knights, word bearers. And again, the word bearers took casualties to do this. They do this a lot, but I haven't shit in the towel in a while. So let's have fun with them.
So you should also at the current time in this game of 11th, the Tau are wildly
upset. Yeah, like three more weeks. All right. So the Tau arrive on the world of Ur-Klemiyet and they say, hey guys, you should join up. We got this great thing. Life will be better under the Tau. And when they get there, the people there are like, yeah, it's great, but we still got to pay the blood tithe. Like we're getting the blood tithe. Oh, and Tau are like, you guys don't have to do the blood tithe anymore. Well, you're with us.
The best part, I love that they just say it so matter of fact. It's not like they don't come across as like hardcore chaos about it. They're like, It just is a matter of fact.
Yeah, the blood tithe's going to be due pretty soon. We should make sure the blood tithe. And Talik, no, there's no blood tithe anymore. You're part of the greater good. It's all good. And then about a year into the assimilation, the word bearers arrive for the blood tithe. And they start slaughtering the populace because that's the blood tithe, summoning demons. So, and the fire cast to run out to try and repel it, but it doesn't go well. The entire planet devolves almost immediately into a demon world.
It becomes a total shit show.
Yeah.
It, also, the Tau kind of bail on. They fight. It is a big fight, but the Tau just go, yeah, we don't want this place anymore. This is crazy.
You guys aren't welcome to be part of our greater good club anymore.
Yeah. They're like, oh, this sucks. Goodbye.
Now, one easy target for the word bearers is, of course, the Imperial cult, given that their Primarch wrote it.
Wrote the book?
Yeah. So they like to target the Ecclesiarchy. And there was a really great one in Segmentum Pacificus. So out in the worlds conquered by Lord Solar Macarius, the Ecclesiarchy built a pilgrimage route wherein Imperial citizens flock there by the billions, trillions, to walk the same path as Lord Solar Macarius.
And this is Solar Macarius is also a badass, but
he's the best Imperial general of all time. Now, as this is going on, word bearer dark apostles use cultists to begin to infiltrate the pilgrimage, sowing seeds of corruption.
Whoa, on this. It isn't like six dudes or a barbershop quartet.
It was initially.
It became more of a cultist movement.
But that's what's so cool about this. Yeah, they start infiltrating this thing and just making little changes to what people are saying in the pilgrimage, little changes, until all of a sudden a rebellion breaks out and the Imperium has to go deal with it. When they get there, they discover there are billions.
With a B, cultists. I'll say it.
All infuse the power of chaos. And so not trying to demons. These are just cultists with a stick going to fight you. Six Space Marine chapters and way too many guard regiments are sent to system to put it down. And the worlds in question are still not recovered fully from this. This is like, I think the Minotaurs were part of this one. So these weren't like, you know, Plan C, freaking, you know,
ultra they were murder shitting the populace.
And yeah, they had to fight through a billion chaos infused dudes with a stick.
In my mind, because they actually don't say that the entire planet's fall. They just said that they had tons of cultists and all these people that were originally part of this pilgrimage. In my mind, it's still one of those things where Ted, the guy that's just repairs shoes, is just going, oh, come on, man.
this place is gross now. Now, I do want to hit on a novel, because actually a bunch of novels, just for people, a teaser of them, but I also want you guys to read them. So there's something called the Dark Apostles series. If you like word bearers, you want to get a good like understanding of chaos, these are some of the better ones to read. And they're a really good example of word bearer style in that the word bearer's goal is rarely conquest. That's what Abaddon's about. He wants to, I'm going to kill the corpse emperor. The word bearers just want boons, the dark gods, and they want to spread the dark gods. They just disrupt and cause havoc.
Audiobook narrator in these is pretty good, guys.
Okay, cool. So to this end, the dark apostle named Yaroluk learns of an incredible device within the planet of Tanakreg. Let's go with Tanakreg. That works. And the Imperial planet is assaulted by Yaroluk and his forces. And the PDF just drops like in an instant. They got no chance here. A planetary defense force against a full-blown Space Marine invasion is adorable. It is the scene from Billy Madison. Like, all right. Now, that being said, they did put out a call before they get wrecked. And the Imperial Guard and the Admech arrive to put down the assault. But when they get there, they discover
so jacked up.
The word bearers. This is funny. I don't know. I think it's funny.
They made earth elementals, basically. They bonded the bodies of all the people they killed with the rubble from the fortresses they destroyed.
They made a stompa, Brad. Call it what it is. They made a chaos stompa.
Yeah, because these were just like abominations.
Yeah.
They were amalgamations of just stuff pushed together. I also think it was probably not very pain-free for the people?
No, I'm sure they were quite aware of it. The cool thing is the Imperial forces are getting ready to fight this Chaos Stompa. And instead of firing on them, it starts firing on the planet itself, because this is actually a Necron tomb world. And Yarlik, it's hard, unclear of how much he knows here. Even in the novel, if he knows where the Necrons are, it's a little bit tricky. But at the base of this tomb world is a Blackstone weapon. And this weapon can turn off the warp to a region of space. And his plan is, I'm going to go take this thing and I'm going to go really ruin the Imperium's day. Now, the tomb wasn't empty and the Necrons inside of it had an opinion about being woken up. So Yarlik actually dies in this first novel, spoiler alert, and his second Marduk escapes with a relic. And that's actually, I don't want to spoil it beyond this. That's the first novel. The next two really follow Marduk and there's a ton of Imperial characters to get in there. But I want to cover this.
It's super chaos-y though.
Yes, because of that.
It's just guys that are like, I'm the main character for the Chaos Gods. Mm-hmm. And then, well, you're not. And then somebody else picks up and goes, nope, I was always
exactly, the main character. Was. And that's why I want to talk about people. You guys should read these books if you like these stories, because the whole concept around it is, especially at the end of the first book, Yarlik, you think, is the protagonist. He's not. He's just a tool to the protagonist. Marduk is a protagonist. The Chaos Gods were always behind Marduk. They just needed Yarlik to do what he had to do so they could fully elevate Marduk. Books are cool. Now, with that, let's talk really quickly, lastly, about the word bearers in modern 40K. We've got 11th edition launching, so we don't really know all that's going to happen, but we've reached the 42nd millennia. The rift has been spread throughout the galaxy, and the word bearers are out in force, including their Primarch. Lorgar is a full-blown demon prince, and he is looking to do what Horus didn't, not necessarily kill the Emperor, but more conquer the galaxy for chaos.
Specifically for chaos.
Mm-hmm. And with the rift open, summoning demons is easier than ever, and any actions performed in the Materium are fueling the Immaterium at an even higher level than ever before. So Lorgar is looking to take advantage of this, and he's basically taken his legion and turned them into Chaos Black Templars. It is just crusade on crusade on crusade.
He's also a huge pain in the ass for the Imperium, because not only is he conquering, he's spreading the primordial truth. He is effectively giving the opposite of the Imperial truth, and it is catching on.
Very much so. And there are rumors of Lorgar walking around at the head of these massive word-bearer and cultist mobs preaching the word. Now, does that mean we're going to get a model? Brad would be so mad. Oh, because he'll be good too. You know he'll have good rules. He'll have really good rules. He'll have really good rules to be playing word bearers on the table. Just,
can't help yourself. I have actually played word bearers.
I'm doing it again. Yeah. You'll be running you'll be running Lorgar and Erebus.
Ugh. Oh, that just hurts me a little bit. But
if they brought back old summoning rules, you'd be there in a second.
100% I will. They brought back old summoning rules. Again, why? There's no end to my hypocrisy.
I would love to play a 2,000 point game with 3,000 points of models. It's significantly easier. I mean, to be fair, guys, if they made Lords of Terra models that were good, Brad would play them.
Let's not go there.
All right. But with that, the thing is, word bearer lore is kind of TBD. Actually, all lore is TBD, if we're being honest right now. But with the word bearers,
they're about to make a big push, though. Mm-hmm. Well, again, we're not talking about a couple of the books right now. Lorgar makes a pretty big appearance in what's going to happen soon.
I just want to point out, Lorgar has appeared more in modern 40K than the con. Than con. Pointing it out. Lorgar.
By the way, you're not wrong. He showed up a lot. I know.
It's going to be so embarrassing when GW just like all of a sudden releases a bunch of White Scar stuff. The Khan has returned. The Khan's the next Primarch. And people are like, people listening to our podcast a couple of years now, like, what the hell is John talking about? Like the number, they're the poster boys. Like all yeah, of all of them,
all the all the entire Hammer and Bolter is White Scars stuff.
It stops being Ultramarines in the covers of all the Space Marine books. It's all white models now. It's all White Scars everywhere. Oh, anyway. But with that, we're going to break for now. Again, like I said, a lot of the Word Bearer stuff will get covered when we do End of Death later this year. And so if you want to know more about them, there is a ton of great novels on Word Bearers. You would not be wrong to go look into it. But next week, we're going to do a little one-off. It's a common request we've gotten has been to go back and talk more about the Titan Legions. So we did a little bit of the Night Cast, but I want to do a cast more time with the Night Legions. We're also going to talk a bit more about the C-Tan that's totally not on Mars, but 100% on Mars, and the entire reason Mars exists. Just calling it out, but 1,000% there. But we're talking about what the Titan Legions are. Really talk more about the Titans themselves in depth, of how big they are and some of their roles in the Horus Heresy.
There's cities.
Yeah.
It's still just walking
by cities. Place. It's, I'm just going to call it, it's a stupid concept of like, why do we put a bunch of guns on top of legs? So sometimes I blow the leg up. It falls over. So it's useless.
I love that certain levels of the Titan also have marketplaces and stuff.
Oh, yeah, they do. The Titans are cool as hell, but it's just, I just get a kick out of it. Like, oh, it's a giant walking robot. What if I blow the ankle up? Shut up. All right. But until then, John Barsotti, Brad Chester.
This guy.
See you guys next week.